All right, here we go. We're back with another weekly Sheep Farm podcast. This is episode 245. Hosted on our bullshit platform, talking nonsense through our big shill mics. In fact, I've got a new small shill mic.
Slimline big shill mic.
Yeah, you're still your old big shill mic. I've got a small shill mic. Mine seem to be cutting out. As you heard his dulcet tones, and probably if you're watching it on video, you've seen his nostrils.
Chris. Which ones are going on video? Because I need to do my hair.
I need to do mine. I don't know, Chris, really.
I just need to make sure I'm not sat here in a vest.
Well, I don't think people care, Chris. I don't know is the answer to that. I haven't got round to putting some on video just yet. But we will do. What I'm going to try and do is load up, say, 5 or 10 of the part twos, put them on video for people if they want to download them or join up to join the video club, if you like. That's it. The format is simple. We release 4 shows a month. And as you're hearing, we're on about releasing part two on video as well. Members get the full podcast plus download. That's the audio version. And non-members get part one as well plus download. All new shows are released on Saturdays. Always on our private bullshit platform at sheepfarm.co.uk. Although we also, as I said, put them on Podomatic, who ship them out to Spotify, Amazon, Audible, and Apple. There you go. I think I've got everything in there. Please subscribe to the website for email notifications. That's info@sheepfarm.co.uk. info@sheepfarm.co.uk.
Join for £2 a month. We never mention it, ever.
I never try and convince people to join.
Well, no, it's not a matter of convincing anyone to join. In fact, it's a matter of people might not know. Right. If you pay £2, you get the extra hour. Right. Or 2 hours or whatever that is.
I know somebody said, I can't get the extra hour. And then I sort of worked out that they actually needed to log in to get the second hour.
Like I said, I've done all that stuff before. I'm thick as pig shit when it comes to
Thick as mince.
Yeah, thick as mince.
Yeah. Thanks for everybody ordering supplements from Health Bunker. Remember, use the promo code. There's some new products on there. Saw Palmetto. I'm sending our Chris some down. I keep forgetting to send him some down. If you're of our age and you're getting up at middle of night for a pee, I found this works amazingly. In fact, I gave some to my father-in-law the other day, Chris, and it's worked very quickly on him for some reason.
What else is it for, that stuff?
It stops inflammation of the prostate. It's good for hormone levels, especially it's good for hormone levels in women as well. It's not just men.
Right.
Obviously, women haven't got the same, haven't got a prostate. So, well, I dare say that anymore. Some women have got a prostate.
It depends whether they choose to have one or not.
If they identify with a prostate, then that's their choice. You're listening to the intro. We're going to try and keep it short, but we said that last week. It went on for 45 minutes. A whole show of its own. I tell you one thing, as you're getting older, do you know you wake up in the morning, right? And you look at the mirror, you're cleaning your teeth or something, you think, where's that frigging grey nose hair come from? And it's like, do you know when a bramble's growing through your fence?
Yeah.
And it just appears and it's like 3 foot long. It's like that, isn't it? but when you pull it out, when you pull it out and throw it, like, I don't know, put it in sink to flush it down sink or whatever, it's like a bloody, one of them daddy long legs spider's
foot
legs.
Long. Yeah.
What's all that about?
Don't know. I remember when you first get grey hairs that they always spikier and...
Yeah.
In fact, our Seb's here at the minute and he's got a grey one in his beard.
Right.
It's quite weird seeing your son have a grey hair.
You feel even older.
I know.
But hair in general, as you get older, grows all, like, out your ears and stuff like that. It's like you've got a dead spider in your ear or something sticking out.
I've got a picture of my missus pointed out, we've got a cat, obviously. Cat was quite young. Yeah. And I had a jet black, just before my daughter was born, I had a jet black beard, cat had jet black hair, and then now we're both grey. And I put it down to the 7-year-old child.
Yeah, I've got it. Yeah, kids do make you grey. Whether you love them or not, they do make you grey. Just constant.
Every time they trip, you're like,
<and they're> yeah. No, Chris, just being there. Being there. Yeah. You don't even have to say anything. Make you grey. That's it. Go on.
No, I'm going to say that were a funny. I made I was saying to you the other day, me and my missus realised, obviously she's South London and I'm Northern. And when...
I noticed that about you.
When Northerners get angry, I get shrill. Like, no, Cicely, what are you doing? Don't do that. Yeah. And when Southerners get angry, they get deeper. What are you doing if you think you can get away with that? So they're naturally shriller, but then go deeper. Where deeper and go shriller.
Right, yeah.
If you go in a southern pub, you hear just, I had a cockney noise, I had a cockney noise. And if you go in an old pub,
it's like when me and your Seb are talking, it's like you just hear this bass, don't you?
Yeah. When he lived with us for a while, I was banging on the roof telling him to shut up because he moved his missus in for a bit as well.
It's like he's playing didgeridoo.
You just heard, he was like a mate in Whale. The walls vibrated. Fucking got into another parallel universe. I used to ring him and said, you shut up.
No, when you hear him talk, you'd think he'd be like Barry White, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Like a massive type guy. And he's not, he's like a bloody a spuggy. Yeah, whatever one of them is. Anyway, this is the intro. This week, we had on our mate Dave Murphy, allegedly Dave, didn't we? We could chat for about an hour and a half. We can chat, can't we?
He's nice, Dave.
Yeah.
He gives off a pleasant aura of a nice person.
Positive energy.
And also, I might as well mention the intro, actually. All the tickets have gone out for the September live gig.
Okay.
They've gone out today, well, speaking
to John Hamer today on the phone, and he said, he were asking me when we were doing another one. I said, we haven't done this one yet. He said, my name's down on that one when you do. I said, it's down, don't worry.
Did you want to do another one, is it? What, up north?
Well, no, that and London.
Oh, anything?
Yeah.
Right, we'd have John every time. Oh, yeah. He's
part of the crew. He's part of the crew. Is John. He's actually helping me edit my book.
Right.
He's just done like four paragraphs as a test to.
Right.
And I've got to say, it made me feel weird reading it because obviously reading my Yorkshire nonsense in it.
Drivel.
And then reading John when he's turd polished it and tidied it up.
Is it better? Can you see a difference?
When he's edited it, it's miles better. It's a total difference. It's a bit like what we're talking about, you know, with Seb's music. I was saying I need to get somebody to produce it. That's all a producer is, really, an editor, aren't they?
Well, I mean, anything's good to have a second pair of eyes as well, isn't it?
Well, I actually said to John, he said, look, I might have to make some. I said, look, John, my ego's out the window. I don't worry about ego. I said, it's the information that's more important. I wouldn't have asked you if I tell you not to make the changes.
Yeah, if you start clinging on to every detail that he edits out.
Yeah,
it's gone fucking ever, gone forever.
Exactly, but it's not. He's only editing out the crap. It's a bit like when you're sculpting. You know, you sculpt out the rubbish, don't you?
Take it away, yeah.
You detract or if you're cooking, from it. Yeah. Mm. You don't leave bloody eggshell in, do you? You've got to take it away, and so you can't be too protective over bits and bobs that you've got.
Unrelated, right? But I just saw a recipe for a veggie curry.
Okay.
And I make curries all the time, and I thought, I wonder how they do it. So I just had a look. And I just read the ingredients list. I don't need to read the method kind of thing. And I thought, I wonder what spices they use, because I use the same ones, you know. And it said all the ingredient vegetables that are there. It said, and there's two spoonfuls of curry sauce. You're like, what? Use Rogan Josh or blah, blah, blah. You're like, then you're not making your own curry, are you?
No.
That's not a fresh curry in my eyes. If you put in jarred curry sauces in. Anyway, related, right? And it's just a part of the nonsense, but I was looking at a chef's version of a bolognese, and I thought, well, that'd be I would have a look at that as well, just out of interest. Mm. All the same ingredients you use in a bolognese, but they put the mint in the oven first to roast it. You don't need to. Does it make any difference?
I don't know. Well, I don't know. Unless you try it, you don't know, though, do you?
No, well, that's true, I suppose. Yeah.
You know, unless you give it a go, you might go, it tastes worse or it tastes better. I don't know.
To me, you're just adding another job to a job that doesn't need a job added to it.
But it's like frying steak off, you know, frying it off before you actually, or beef, you know, sealing it before you put it in the oven.
Yeah.
It tastes better, doesn't it? I think it tastes better, personally.
But I'd do that. I mean, but then is it just a visual, you know? I know it's in recipes, though. You know, if you're reading a recipe in online or in a book or whatever, they always go blah, 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 and then they put ingredients in that you possibly can't get just to throw you off, just to make you feel like shit.
Call it its Latin name.
Yeah. Usually the story before recipes about how they went to Italy in 2000. You know, it's just so fucking self-indulgent, isn't it? Yeah. Give me the basics, man.
Yeah. Managed to get it off this virgin on this hilltop. Yeah, yeah. She's only there once every 10 years. You can't get it anywhere else. Yeah.
When me and my husband ran it in 2000 times. Just tell me the fucking recipe.
Moon's got to be in a certain position to get this special mushroom.
It's just more bullshit. It's more bullshit in cooking. Loads of bullshit in cooking.
But in the bullshit everywhere, just to make it sound. I mean, one of the things that Jamie Oliver did, your mate, Jamie Oliver, he made it out he was simplifying it all, when in reality, he won't worry. We're just copying everybody else's stuff.
Well, I mean, he was, I mean, whatever. I'm not going to slag off Jamie Oliver. I'm sure he's all right. Not a fan myself. I'm not, do you know what? I'm not a fan of watching any cooking programs. I don't watch any at all, even though I'm a chef. People go, hey, you, you. No, okay, because it's just they've turned everything into a competitive sport, haven't they?
Yeah.
There's not that guy who got cancelled for
that bald-headed guy
for James in a lot of women.
Yeah. Hey, cheeky.
Yeah, the other one. You know, when he gets to end, and I mean, again, I'm not judging these, but you know, they're judging it and they're like slopping it. And this poor fucker stood in front of him sweating with his eyeballs popping out.
It's his dream. It's his dream, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, shit that is, you know. Yeah. I just don't like that stuff. I don't like it. I mean, there's one for sewing. There's one for pottery.
Yeah, there's one for architects, wasn't there? One was for it? Something like, yeah, for everything, aren't there?
It's all that same, it's like that, what is it, Dragon's Den model, or what is it? What's that other one?
X Factor.
What's the guy?
X Factor.
No, the guy, the you fired one.
Oh, yeah, Alan Sugar.
Alan Sugar. Lou said if Tom Jones and Alan Sugar had a child, it looked like me.
Quite possibly, yeah. Yeah. Lucky child.
A bit like Alan Sugar. Yeah.
Is that the 1970s version of Planet of the Apes? Or...
It's a good combo, isn't it? Thanks, Mrs.
Yeah.
Alan Sugar and Tom Jones.
Yeah. Well, yeah, he's got curly hair, Alan Sugar, isn't
he? Yeah. I don't know how she got onto it. That she's saying, didn't you throw the knickers at him? I said, yeah, if you threw your knickers.
Alan Sugar?
Who's it? Tom Jones. Why did they make that up? Or why
I don't know.
Is that a thing that when you think Tom Jones, you think someone throwing his knickers out?
I know. How did they get them off if they had jeans on?
Like a parachute.
Yeah. Did they used to just bring them in the pockets and just throw a pair of knickers at them?
An old pair. It just sounds like a load of mythology to me. In my opinion.
Yeah. But there might have been them old ones that they just wear once a month.
Might just take a spare pair in your pocket.
Yeah. Spare pair.
Just to lob at him.
Might be incontinent ones. Anyway, we're going to go because we've already been yapping on for 12 minutes about shite. So, right, I hope you enjoy this chat we have with Dave. If you're going to join us in part two, we'll see you there. If not, we'll see you next week. Bye. All right, welcome back to Sheep Farm. I nearly forgot then what we were. Shill Farm, whatever you want to call us, and the bullshit platform, this, that, and other. This is episode 245. I get a feeling like I'm sounding like Captain Kirk when I'm saying that now. You know, this is Captain's Log, 245. Steering through clown world. today we've got Dave Murphy, or allegedly Dave.
Hi, Dave.
We'll put this out on YouTube. We'll use the video. On YouTube as well, so you see my and Dave's
done
my head shining. I'm done mine.
I can barely see it.
Yeah.
I did have three strands.
I did have three strands. that will take piss out of each other's hair. Although I can't really take piss out of my hair. Eyebrows maybe.
Or
yours. Yeah.
There's not a lot between us, is there?
No, not many. No, you've got three strands. Me and Dave's got fuck all. We'd be like Bobby Charlton, brown versions.
What have you been up to, Dev? Anything of interest?
I've been working on. I've literally this year been heads down on this thing called the Mortgage Project, which was aiming to pay people's mortgages off for them. Because essentially, the whole mortgage thing is the biggest fraud in the history of the world. And if everybody knew what was going on, literally, this is what Henry Ford said, if everybody knew how the monetary system worked, there'd be a revolution in the morning. And that's the same with mortgages. I think last year I did a talk about, you know, the fraud behind the mortgages. And then I had this idea of getting rid of them. And so we've started the project. And the initial idea I had didn't kind of work out. We tried a little test with 100 people, and kind of hoped that we were actually producing promissory notes with actual backing behind them, and we kind of hoped that they would slide under the radar, but that didn't happen. But so we've been adopting and adapting our strategy. And now we've got, I think, a pretty solid strategy behind it. And we're opening up to the rest of the people who've signed up. It's looking very exciting at the moment because the banks have responded exactly the way we thought they would.
I mean, you've been talking about this type of stuff for well over a decade now, haven't you?
Yeah, but, you know, it's time to stop talking and do something about it, If we just keep sitting back, this agenda will continue to roll on, and we can see where it's going.
Yes.
We can see where it's going. End of personal property and complete and utter totalitarian slavery, you know.
I mean, even when you think how far it's gone since last time we talked, it's mental. Yeah, the stuff that's happened. Yeah.
It's accelerating like crazy, you know. We want to look at this cost of living crisis, this engineered cost of living crisis.
And then you've got the Trump thing. I've got a small mail order business and I sell quite a lot to America. And then you had that tariff thing. And even before anything happened, my orders dried up for an entire week. I didn't sell a thing. And it was just people panicking, the bog roll effect, wasn't it? Where people just panicking and thinking, oh, it's picked up a bit now. But actually, the tariff is nothing. It's like 50p to a pound, but they made such a hoo-ha about it.
Well, I watch a YouTube channel called China Observer, and they literally just report on what's going on in China, because obviously the CCP won't let out anything sort of untoward. But if you watch what's going on in China, I mean, it's quickly collapsing. The NWO is basically trying to position China as the next big superpower, but no, they're falling to pieces.
Is that because of the tariff thing, Dev?
And the fact their population has completely collapsed, and the whole economic system has collapsed essentially, because the joke we have about made in China, it's all going to be crap. Well, literally it is. It's there's something they call tofu dregs, right? So so they'll look at a bridge that was just built and they'll say, well, that's made of tofu dregs, right? It's like the steel rebar isn't steel. You know, when they break up the concrete and have a look, they can bend the steel like this because it's not real steel, because they cut corners left, right, and center. So now they created all this amazing infrastructure and they're building all these, all this flash technology, but it's all tofu dregs. It's all fake.
I wonder what that means, tofu dregs, then. It must be like...
Shite.
I know what it means. But I mean, it must be when they make tofu, there must be a bit... Because you get tofus in squares, though. It must be like the shitty bits.
Like the scum on top type of thing.
Throw away, yeah.
Yeah, so it looks the part. The rebar looks like rebar, but you can bend it like this. So all you've heard of the ghost cities over in China, yeah? Well, some of these ghost cities are only like maybe 8 to 10 years old, but literally the whole city is falling apart. It's brand new essentially, and it's falling to pieces because all the corners were cut. So there's a new car I'm trying to remember the name of it, but it's a Chinese make of car.
Is it BYD?
BYD. Now, on the surface, it looks brilliant. You know, it's got all this technology and stuff, but they're bursting into flames like crazy over in China. And the self-drive thing doesn't work. Yeah. It looks
a bit like a Tesla, doesn't it?
That's the future for us, really. We're seeing
self-combusting cars.
Before I get actually, Dev, when you just mentioned that, I was telling Dom the other day, I watched a few documentaries about Japan, and there sit some of the villages, and they had this one where it was a village, and there was no one under 16 lived in this village, and all the old people were making dummies of children and putting them in the playgrounds. It looked creepy as fuck. It looked like something from Twilight Zone.
Fucking
and then a family moved in who were obviously, because it was cheap, and they had the first baby in like 20 years that had been born in this village. And then there were another one where the mayor was the youngest guy in the village and he was 60.
Well, this is what's happening.
1.2 now, Dev, their replacement, there it is.
I'm saying this is what's happening all over the world. You know, the system is telling us, you know, trying to drum into our heads, overpopulation. Mm. It's not true. It's the opposite. Mm. Literally, China and Japan and North Korea and Italy, these are the places that are going to disappear first because their population, fertility rate is so low. And it's been like that for generations. That there's nothing on earth that's gonna save them.
And I think they were the most tapped as well. The Japanese, I think they're the ones who lined up the most willingly for the Taparuna.
I've been saying this for a long time, actually, because I found an MEP in the European Parliament talking about this, and Daniel Hannan, and he was saying, this is the most serious issue that we're faced here.
Yes.
You know, Europe is literally disappearing. And he corrected himself. He said, no, actually, it's already happened. Populations have crashed. There's only two things we can do about it. First one is accept demographic collapse or import 100 million people. Guess which one they chose.
We know what's going on there.
Yeah, we know which one they chose, don't we? Let's get a new populace in that we can tag and chip, and they'll just conform to everything we say, because there's no law. We don't have to have any laws for these people. They'll just use them as slaves.
But also, you've got to remember that when this agenda does anything, they have multiple uses for whatever they do. Mm-hmm. So one of the big uses they've got for this this invasion that's happening in not just in this country, in all countries.
Yeah.
The same thing is happening everywhere. Everywhere. The reason for that is, and it's quite obvious, it's their digital ID. They need the problem, reaction, solution to get us to beg for this digital ID.
I was talking to a taxi driver. In Croatia, I was talking to a taxi driver in Croatia, and he was saying that in the crash in 2008, a lot of Croatians left, went to Europe or America or Australia, and they never returned. And now people from, for some reason, Mexico and South America are coming there. They're their new workforce.
Yeah.
Because the Croatian population's disappeared, and they didn't come back after the crash. They stayed away.
Yeah. Actually, there's a lot of Americans leaving America because you know the cost of living out there is absolutely crazy, and they're going to places like Mexico, right? But because they're going over there and they still have remote work jobs in America, right? But because they're still getting paid quite a decent wage, they're living quite well over in Mexico. But the unintended effect is because all these Americans are coming over or rich Americans coming over, they're driving their house prices up for the locals. Mm-hmm. And now there's this resentment, this growing anger against, you know, these immigrants.
Yes,
right.
Well, that's a strange thing, isn't it? Because Britons go to Spain, for instance, and go open the Red Lion pub and have all day breakfast. They think that the Spanish love the influx of Brits because they bring all the money with them. What they don't realise is that the local populace actually hates them. You know, they don't like seeing foreigners coming throwing up in streets and basically taking over.
Yeah.
So that is a type of immigration. Everywhere. Yeah.
It's happening everywhere.
Well, like the thing you described, initially they'll be really happy that they're bringing all the money over, and then they'll be like, oh, hang on a minute. my house price has just doubled. I can't afford to rent it anymore.
And do you know what? Like the generation, not our generation, but probably the ones before that, my wife's parents type of thing, they actually think that they have a right to go to Spain, for instance, not necessarily go to Torremolinos and get hammered and throw up on the street, but they think they're helping their economy by going over there. There's this strange thing that Brits have got that we're actually paying for Spain, you know, or holiday destinations. Well,
they are to an extent, though. If it's managed properly.
Yeah, but they are. If nobody went there, they'd have to come up with another way of living, wouldn't they?
I think more accurately, they think they're bringing something of benefit to the country. Yeah,
that's more accurate. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Like the conquerors did, you know, they think they're bringing civilization to India, but on the other foot,
they don't want immigrants coming in here, but they don't see themselves as immigrants.
No, we're different, folks, we're British. Yeah. Hey, actually, just reminded me of something. I work in a restaurant, and there's an Indian lad works there. And I've worked in London in the catering industry my entire life. Well, I'll say in London and all around it, my entire life in the catering industry, just about. And this Indian guy said he's got to go home back to India, because he can't get a visa unless he earns 40 grand a year working. Yeah. But this, I've never, ever, in all my years, and everyone I work with in London, we're always foreign, you know, coming in and out. I've never heard of that before, but they've changed it. I was telling my son, I was telling him, he said they changed it because his mate was trying to come over with his American wife about 5 years ago, and it's just come in now. It's just properly come in. He's got to go home. He can't stay. Right. I spoke to him today. Oh. I'd never heard of that before.
But if you want to lift a note, get free dental care and...
Yeah, so that's fine.
And free phone and clothing. And
this poor lad
like
just wants to work.
Yeah. I mean, the irony
best thing
is...
for him to do is, you know, when he gets deported, jump on a boat...
I nearly said that to him there, but I thought that could go down really badly in a kitchen environment.
Have you got a dinghy?
I nearly said that. just paddle out a mile and come back in.
Yeah. We should all do that.
But they were saying to me, suddenly he was saying that the whole of England is built on people coming over from foreign countries and working, especially London, the entire city, isn't it? Yeah. It collapsed without all the immigration.
And it's not just a recent thing either, Chris, is it?
No, it's going back forever. Even like when the Brexit thing happened, everyone's like, oh, I'm going to have to... I'm like, immigration has always been here. What are you talking about? If you've got a job, you're fine. But now you're not, all of a sudden. Mm.
Yeah, Britain always saw itself as some, well, over the last 300-400 years, as a kind of continental, worldwide, not just a
melting pot.
Yeah, exactly. Not just construed to
London,
Britain
especially.
Either.
Yeah, London, especially.
Hence, why are we here? I mean, we're part wherever, and we wouldn't be here, would we?
No,
it is that melting pot of different. That is Britain, isn't it? But
the population crisis has been, you know, going on since before World War II. And, you know, just as you say, that's the reason we're here, because after the war, there weren't enough people to do the work in this country. Mm. So they literally called out to the West Indies and India to, you know, come to the motherland. Yeah, and there's lots of jobs and the streets are paved with gold and all that.
Apart from them in them flats in London where it said no blacks, no Irish, no dogs. Or whatever way around it was. Apart from that,
everywhere there, wasn't it?
The thought was there; it just didn't follow.
Yeah, the thought were there. Yeah,
yeah. But have you not noticed that you know, this agenda is accelerating?
Oh yeah, bloody hell!
It's almost frightening.
It's since 2020 as well, hasn't it? They've cranked it up, and the download of information for people like us or people listening has been huge, hasn't it? I mean, no doubt you learned so much up to 2020, but how much have you learned in that 4 years?
Well, you've got out that far.
How much have you learned in the 5 years after 2020 has been huge, hasn't it?
Yeah. And it's, again, it's part of this acceleration. I don't think it's just a natural acceleration, because I also feel time is speeding up as well. You know, I'm noticing.
I don't think it's just age, Dev. I don't think it's just age.
No,
I think it's not. It feels like it's rapido. Everything's. Even I get people at work. Someone's just gone.
Yeah, someone's just gone.
Just gone. Someone's gone. We're into September, yeah. Then it's Christmas again.
I woke up this morning thinking I've got this talk with you guys at 7 o'clock. And now it's 7 o'clock. It's like where did that time go from when I woke up?
Don't fib, Dave. Really said, oh, I've got to talk to them too. Fucking Yorkshire bastards.
Do you know what? No. I heard someone say this on I can't remember where I heard him say it. And I tried it. You know, when you go, you look at a clock. And you go, I might be talking crazy, by the way. When you go 1,000, 2,000 to get to 10. So if you look at a clock and you do it to 15, it's always a second over or two. And I've tried it a few times. But you think that over a day, what I mean is I might be talking crazier. Has it actually physically speed up? Because you used to be able to go 1,000, 2,000, 1,000. You could virtually get to, 15 seconds or whatever. And it'd be about right. Or 1 Mississippi, 2 Mississippi. But honestly, I've done it a few times now and it seems to be a bit faster. Say, what if there are a second in every minute?
I've wondered if I could find an old watch that I used to have and just set the watch and then come back to it 10 days later and see if it still matches. Yeah. Because I get the feeling that, it might not just be our perception. It might be the fact that something is happening. The electronics, all our clocks now are electronic and no doubt connected to, to the internet, because, you can get Wi-Fi that goes over the power cables. So it could be that anything connected to the electricity can get signals that.
And that includes us. That includes us, because obviously we run electricity of some sort. And anyway.
Well, I was cycling to work early this morning and the sun was up there, high in the sky, and the moon was there as well. And that happens all the time. In the mid-afternoon, the moon's up in the high in the sky.
I can't ever remember seeing the moon.
I don't remember that happening when I was a kid.
Seeing it once or twice and being freaked out by it at the time, but never regularly. Yeah. It was just like an amazing, once in a blue moon.
But when you think, Brian Cox, he'll explain to us what.
I got everyone out about a year or so ago. I got everyone out at work looking at it, and they're like, "Yeah, but it's a phenomenon. I'm sure it happens."
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, "Well, if you draw a very basic diagram of a circle, which is supposed to be the Earth, and then a moon and a sun here, that would mean 90%, 80% of the whole world would be in darkness." So,
Chris, you're being too realistic there, mate.
And also, if you have an eclipse, right? If you have an eclipse, that means 95% of the rest of the world should be in darkness, because both light sources are there at the same time.
Well, actually, one of the things I put in one of my first flat Earth videos was, when you see the moon and it's pretty much full during the day. Now, I've seen a full moon like at midday. Yeah, I looked up and there it is. But if you think about it, midday is when the sun is pretty much directly overhead, or okay. And if the moon is in the sky at midday, that means how does the moon get lit up when the sun is on the other side?
I've often thought that as well. It's just insanity, isn't it? I got my son. I mean, me and Chris have spoke about this for a while, but I got my son to ask his teacher in science, how come the closer you get to the sun, the colder it gets? And he basically told him, shut up, stop asking stupid questions.
My view of that actually is that, so before you get to the firmament, there's a layer of something that prevents us from going any higher. So about 75 miles up, there's that thing. You saw the go faster rocket.
Yeah,
went straight up, really fast, and then it went dunk, right? And then it fell down again. Yeah, so it wasn't something solid because it would have destroyed itself on contact. It was something sort of not, sponge, solid,
like a force field type thing. You expect
field, even, they say there's water up there. It could be something dense.
Could be in a bubble.
Not hard,
a bubble.
But dense.
Yeah, a bubble. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good idea.
Could be a bubble, couldn't it? Yeah.
But that layer, what if that layer is where the sun is actually focused on or the light from the sun is actually behind it. Mm. It actually focuses on that layer, mm. and that's where we see the apparent sun.
Yeah.
And then it diverges from that point. So as you go up higher, it's colder because it's literally cold. But the sunlight when it
you're missing
hits
it.
The ground,
you're missing it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Basically. Yeah.
Like a giant. What do you call it when you microscope the sun? You know, when you do it with a big.
Maybe that's what somebody's doing, shining a torch.
Dave Weiss basically has a couple of videos where he shows that you see the bright sun, but behind it you see a tiny disc of light, mm-hmm. which you know is the projector, and then the sun is you know just a focal point.
That's becoming more noticeable as well, isn't it?
Maybe that's what I mean. Yeah. That could be to do with the moon that we're talking about and all this stuff, mm. couldn't it? Could all be that. You do get the feeling, especially the spraying and stuff. Maybe that I've always thought they're trying to hide something in the sky. It's very odd. Mm. That, and something else I've noticed. I don't know if you noticed this, that they at night. I don't know if it's just here. The temperature goes up. It gets really hot here in the middle of the night, like 3-4 in the morning.
Wakes like an
up.
Electric heat.
Yeah, like a heat. Yeah, and it wakes me up. It's really odd.
Well, is that funny? So I woke up in the middle of the night suddenly sweating.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
And I had a noise in my ear, like an engine. It was like a
buzzing, like a generator type of sound. Yeah.
Just it happens to me all the time. In the middle of the night.
Yeah, and it's this has gone on with me for about three years. I've been going through menopause. Just dawned on me.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's gone on for years here with me. It's weird. And it's. I'm sure it's something to do with that blanket of fog, that blanket cloud thing that we keep getting. And it's like that dense heat. It's not like natural summer heat. You know, it's just a dense, like a blanket's been thrown over us kind of thing.
Yeah. So what do you think this... Sorry, Dave. Go on.
I was just going to say that dense, you said cloudy type stuff. I was driving by... the Seven Sisters, the cliffs in Eastbourne. Mm. And so the road goes along, you know, parallel to the cliffs. And this was midday. Sun was up. And I saw this thick cloud, literally cloud. It was literally on the water. So you could see it. Normally you could see out to sea, but you couldn't see because it was like a thick fog over the sea. And it was coming over the cliffs. Now, we're talking about nearly, 100 foot, 70, 100 foot over the cliffs. It's actually more than that, isn't it? Maybe, I don't know. But this fog came over the cliffs. Now, this is when the sun was out. Normally, the sun burns off fog.
Yeah.
But this thick stuff was actually coming over in you know, bright sunshine.
Yeah.
So, yeah, some
And like you just said then, though, because I've thought this, when those big, thick, heavy clouds that were making it hot, basically, usually the sun dissolves the clouds as the morning starts, and it can be, even if it's going to be a hot day, it can be misty and misty, and the sun slowly dissolves the clouds, doesn't it? Or, you know, but they just stayed there all day, and it stayed at 25 degrees or whatever.
Yeah, and they don't seem to move, do they?
No, that was heat wave was just like it was, I don't know, so maybe they're hiding something in the sky. Maybe that's the point of the those big thick clouds. I don't know.
I tell you what, though, you go abroad places. I don't know what it's like is it St. Lucia that you go back to in the winter? I don't know what it's like there, but when I were in Croatia, the sky was like the blue that you expect it to be.
Yeah. I just went to a Greek island. I went to Santorini. Yeah. It was the same there.
Yeah. It's only when you get back to Britain you notice. And I know it's a cloudy place, Britain. I'm not saying it's fantastic weather here, but...
It's different,
it's different.
It?
It's not the same.
You've got to remember what it used to be like.
Yeah. It didn't used to be like this. This is... It's like it's artificial. We're living in some kind of artificial...
I think the people who run the show, they were trying the heatwave thing, and it didn't... I don't think it quite pulled off this summer, like expected, to be honest with you.
Well, it hasn't rained as much. That's what I would say. Yeah. It definitely hasn't
hot.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's obvious they're using these weather weapons now in anger.
Like a spoiled child not getting their own way.
I mean, you look at, again, China. It was a few months ago, it was like so hot. The tarmac was melting. Cars were melting. It was so hot in one place, and another place there was massive floods. I think there are floods in India right now as well.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
And Yeah, so if they're using these weather weapons on specific areas, well, you know, the climate doesn't have fences around it. So whenever they affect one area, it affects somewhere else as well. Yeah. So while they can target certain places, yeah, they can't account for, I don't think, they can't account for the knock-on effect.
The yin and the yang, if you like. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I agree, yeah. I think that they seem to be concentrating on Britain, probably in the States as well, for some reason, or maybe Europe as well. But I didn't see any in Croatia at all. There was no evidence. Even planes flying over, there was no chemtrailing.
Mm. Yeah, there's none in Santorini when I went.
Yeah.
Or in St. Lucia.
Yeah. No. So you've got to ask yourself that the chemtrails and the contrails would be the same in every country because the altitude that they're flying at would be exactly the same temperature, more or less, give or take a few degrees. If you fly over Egypt, it's still minus 60.
Well, at this point, we don't have to supply any proof anymore. It's like obvious now, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
And just like a lot of this is now so obvious that we don't have to start arguing about it because there it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we've got to the point now where you know they don't care anymore. They think they've done down most of the population. They think they've got so much power that there's nothing we can do to stop them. But so, and it's not just all the physical things as well. It's the psychological things that concern me more actually. You know, the effect of this AI stuff, for instance, the effect it's having on people is, you know, I think is underrated at this point. Because
that was another point. Sorry, Dev. In Japan, in the same thing I was watching, I think the Musk AI bot or whatever it is, I've never used one. They brought out one and it's like a fake girlfriend. And apparently if you keep talking to it, it goes to adult level. So, you know, it's like an anime character and it sold out in Japan immediately as soon as it released. And it was saying that their fertility rate's right down. People are having weddings on their own. Women are getting married on their own. Because there's no...
Sounds like a plan, that.
Because the youngsters aren't even meeting each other. They've lost all interest in anything in the future. That's what they had a word for it. I forgot what the word was. But it's like they've got no enthusiasm for even owning things or anything, doing anything.
If you think what they've what Facebook was doing when there was an engineer from Facebook who literally came out and said, you know, we're actually exploiting your psychology. Yeah. We're literally giving you dopamine hits, right? Yeah. And getting you addicted to our services, right? Because we're just psychologically messing with you, right? Well, imagine how much they psychological mischief they can get up to when they present you with this
bot,
you know, fake female, fake woman, or fake man, because they're doing it for women as well. This fake personality that sounds so realistic and will essentially stroke your ego.
Yeah, yeah. Artificially. Yeah.
Totally. And it's going to give you those dopamine hits. It's going to give you that addictive, addictive sort of personality that we've all developed. About their technology in one form or another, you know. Yeah. I'm finding that I'm spending a lot of time in front of the screen now. And I know I shouldn't be, but, you know, it's just, you know, I guess I'm addicted.
Well, a lot of the things you can't even get done now. You know, you can't just go to the bank and withdraw money to give a tradesman, for instance, without a stupid explanation to a bank teller what you're going to use the money for and go through all that rigmarole. So people just pay electronically through the bank. We're already trained to do that.
Yeah, but this idea of this AI is again the final assault on humanity, you know, by taking our minds from us. There are people, I found this about 2 weeks ago. I was having a discussion with somebody on Facebook and I realized that they were responding to me using ChatGPT.
Really?
You know, it was like, because I've been as a computer programmer, former computer programmer, I was interested in AI or the idea of it since, you know, from since when I first started programming. And so I've been, you know, over the years looking at the chatbots and chatting to them and doing my own informal Turing test, which is a test to see if, you know, if you can be fooled
It's
that,
actually
you know, you're
intelligent.
talking to a human, right, then it's passed the Turing test. So I was testing these at chatbots and I could always trip them up. I know when I look at ChatGPT, I can see the way that it forms sentences and the way it overly wordily speaks and stuff. You can tell it's AI.
It's because there's no human error in it, involved in it, and it's a very regimented system, if you like.
But it's because it's got the whole, you know, the whole vocabulary available to it, and it knows how to structure words and structure sentences. And it's overly wordy, and it's you know, you can well, I can
It's
tell
buying
when.
itself time while it's finding the right direction to go in, if you know what I mean. I think
But it
that's
probably uses
sometimes.
words like what we do. We've got our own dialects, if you like. You'd only use a certain amount of words every day, won't you? Very rarely will you use big words, for instance, let's just call them. Whereas that system would use them, wouldn't it?
Yes, because it's got it available to it. It knows how to structure language. I mean, at the end of the day, it is a large language model. That's all it is. People think it's intelligent. People think it's got some thinking behind it. Let me give you this example. Imagine if I had a pocket calculator here, right? And I typed in, what's 2 + 2? And it comes up in red letters, 4. Right? Is that intelligent?
Do you
Well,
think this
no.
AI thing, and it's just come from all these years of Google gathering all that data and all that
Oh
information,
yeah, of course. That's
and then
what it's
it's just
doing.
a talking
All
Google, isn't it, really?
social media, everything.
And that's probably
So
why there was a free for all.
if I've got a pocket calculator and I added a text to speech output on it, and I typed in 2 + 2, and it went in what's that Stephen Hawking's voice, four, right? Is that intelligent? No, it's not,
No,
right?
exactly.
What if I added you know, a voice input, you know, module on it, and I said, what's 2 + 2? And he went, four.
I wonder if it could do the
Still not
bollocks one on
intelligent, right?
bollocks one on a calculator. I can remember everyone used to
Oh,
do
yeah. But
that.
what if I added, right, a chat GPT large language model, right, that instead of saying four, it just said things like, oh, that's really easy. Why didn't you challenge me? Obviously it's four, right? Is that intelligent?
No,
No, it's the
no.
same
It's more
thing.
words.
All it is it knows how to understand language, right? It's got a whole world full of language, you know, metadata. So if you put something on, you know, you put a post online, there's metadata under that now that tells you what your post is all about. So it can look, it scans through all the metadata, gets all related content, and then because it knows how language works, it stitches it together, right? And it has other rules like, you know, biases programmed in and remembering how you responded to it before and stuff. And it just gives you what you want to hear,
When
essentially.
you do a search on Google now and it gives you an answer, that AI answer at the top, a lot of the times it's just blatantly wrong. It's cobbled together a load of shit together, and if you once you check it, you know it's wrong.
It must be quite frustrating for you though, Dad, if you were a computer programmer, because you're obviously into computers, and then you're seeing it now. Because I mean, if all this were used for good reasons, it'd be fine, wouldn't it? But you know, it's being used for nefarious reasons, so it must be quite frustrating because you want to look at it, and you're quite excited about it because it's technology,
Well,
but then.
that's why I'm not a computer programmer anymore,
Yeah.
because I finally realized. Yeah, so I was working in New York, working in the New York Stock Exchange, actually. And I was asked to build a brand new system, and it was left to me to design it and everything. And I just built this amazing system. I was really proud of it. And a part of it was, you know, people give me a brief. I would go away and make up a mock up a model of it, so it looks like it was doing what it's supposed to do, and present it to them. And there was this one woman who had this job that took her a month to do every month. It was like looking at like several different spreadsheets and trying to figure out how to assign booths on the trading floor to people. So I went away. I found out how she did it. And I went away. I made a mock-up, basically, a working mock-up, yeah? That literally you pressed a button and it did it all in a few seconds, right? So I was really proud of it. I was really thought, oh, look what I've done. And I went and showed them and I was like, look, I did this, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, everyone was like, you know, really sort of pleased and that. And the woman whose job I just
destroyed.
Got rid of,
yeah.
She said, oh, it's lucky I'm retiring then, isn't it? And I realized what I've been doing.
Yeah,
I've literally been not only taking people's jobs from them, I've been taking the humanity out of decision making.
Yeah,
because you know, she would also, what I didn't capture in that process was the relationships she'd made with all the people.
Yes.
And go and thinking, oh, okay, I know this person really should be on this side because I know he doesn't like to be over that side.
He works well, you know, with that guy, yeah.
All
yeah.
The humanity part has gone.
Yeah.
and yeah, that's what I realized, that's what I was doing. So I couldn't be a programmer anymore.
You could say the same happened in kitchens as well, Dave, because you work in a kitchen and you make an X amount of money, so you need X amount of staff to do it. But obviously in a kitchen, it'd work in a bar, because obviously I worked in the catering industry. But in a bar at work, she'd have X amount of staff because it's busy, so you need them to serve that many drinks. And if it's not busy, then you can look at this computer program and you can send some people home or ask someone to finish early, etc. But my last head chef job, they start doing it in the kitchen. But it didn't work like that because you've got to prep the food and get it ready for the service, which is, you know, usually kicks off at 7 o'clock. You need a few hours before to get everything ready. But they go, why have you got three guys working? The computer's saying we're not taking any money at the moment, so you should send someone home. You'd be like, yeah, but what happens at 7 o'clock when it kicks off and we've got no stuff ready? So they were using that program, and no one were thinking past the computer program.
That's because they're automatons as well, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah. Send someone home, it's not busy. You know, can't you do it with two members of staff instead of three? Can't you do this? Can't you do that? And you were getting to a point where you'd just be there on your own.
Well, think about also the way it's... life is becoming blander and blander. Yeah.
Goes back to your tofu model, doesn't it, really?
Tofu drinks, yeah. No, you know, the architecture, for one thing, you know, we've seen that all our lives, that the architecture, you know, all this amazing architecture that would uplift your soul just looking at it is being torn down and being replaced by flat blocks, you know, with no character, no nothing. Remember when we were growing up, right? The number of colors on the road, cars, colors of the car, it'll be all different colors. Yeah. Now you've got like gray, white, and black,
and another version of gray,
blue one, red one. But literally, all the cars are looking the same now. Yeah, that's deliberate.
Yeah, and they all came out at the same time. That SUV, I've got a SUV kind of Kia, a brown one, by the way. I found a brown one because I didn't want a black or a white one. That SUV shape came out, didn't it? And then all at the same time, from Skoda up to Porsche, are making that SUV shape all at the same time. And if you look at the electric cars, they've all got a similar look as well. All came out at the same time. All that, they use a lot of blue light on them and a bit similar looking.
And they've also got that evil look about them, haven't they?
Yeah, that's
like, you know, the eyes, the lights, they've all got that evil demon look.
I tell you what, we're around the time,
yeah,
you
know, it's true.
Remember cars, the cartoon, kids' cartoon, and planes, where they had their own eyes and stuff in the headlights.
Yeah, but going on what Dave said then about their eyes, if you watch him designing a car, right, he even goes down to the noise that the door makes when it slams, you know, thousands of hours of testing it. So the eyes are done on purpose to look a certain way, whether it's to look aggressive or whatever.
So I mean, do you remember our day, the cars look all happy, didn't they? Smiley, like, you know, Morris Minor. It's like,
cars in our day and our parents' day represented freedom and expression and whatever style and whatever car you drove, that was you. It sort of mirrored who you were.
There's a guy here, he's got just next to where I live, and he's always polishing it. He's got an old Cortina.
Yeah.
Mint condition. And you just look at it and you think, oh, man, look at that. It's a proper thing of beauty, you know what I mean? Yeah. And it's not even that...
And that's a mass-produced car as well.
Really. Pretty square as well. Yeah, but you look at it and you think, oh, I'd love to have that.
I was thinking the same about a Capri.
Capri, exactly.
I'd love to get one of them again.
Yeah. Even the badges on the back had style, you know?
Made of metal.
Of metal and proper engraved.
They're all made of plastic now, aren't they?
But like I said, that would to represent freedom, the freedom of the road and
also pride, workman's pride of producing... You know, something unique.
Well, the agenda there is that you know, they want to get rid of car ownership. So right now they're making cars look so utilitarian, like a toaster, so that we don't fall in love with them anymore.
Yeah,
you know, and so we're more likely to give them up. Yeah,
yeah. You're getting an electric can. It's like getting on a bus, isn't it? Really, it looks like a bus with a screen in it.
Yeah, what happens when, you know, all cars are self-drive and all you do is you get into it and it goes and takes you there and you get out of it again. You've lost that, again, like the sense of of freedom of controlling, I can go wherever I want type, you know.
And dare I say hope, because do you remember the film like Shawshank where the whole thing was built around hope, wasn't it? If you remember Morgan Freeman at the end, if you take hope away, basically, which is what they've taken away from people. I know hope can be a false dawn as well, but and we're going to talk about manifestation in a bit, but hope...
But
Go on, Karen.
No, I'm going to say, did the electric car... Did the whole electric car thing, has it failed on purpose, or is it...
I think it's failed on purpose.
Definitely on purpose.
Yeah, definitely.
On purpose.
Because the self-drive car they've been trying to do forever, I mean...
You think about it... Again, there's several purposes for whatever they do. The electric cars have a limited range, right? So you can only go as far as they've got those charging stations.
Yeah.
So when you put that together with Agenda 2030, right, where you know, the rural areas are off limits, well, there won't be any charging stations in the rural areas.
Yeah.
Right? So, you know, so your car will only go a certain distance, especially if they put geofencing as well, so that your car won't work beyond a certain...
What was it in Hunger Games? District 13? Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Out of bounds.
So, but even that is just a stepping stone, because the electric car is the faulty technology, right? It's a faulty technology only designed to get rid of the petrol and diesel infrastructure. So when enough people turn to electric cars, the petrol and diesel infrastructure will be scaled that back and then eventually taken away altogether. And then when they finally realize that these electric cars aren't going to work, you know, they're not working, we don't have the power to keep charging these cars, then they can't, you know, also the whole exploding thing, you know, of course they can make batteries that can last pretty much forever, but they're not giving us them. They're giving us the explosive ones, so that when it becomes obvious that these electric cars are actually worse for the environment, they'll ban them. But now they can't go back to petrol or diesel cars because the infrastructure's gone.
That makes sense.
I mean, the guy that invented the catalytic converter in the 90s has actually said they solved any form of pollution with a catalytic converter, because everything that comes out of there now, not that you'd put your mouth over it, but it isn't harmful to the environment. And even if it was slightly harmful, they could, over time, make them better and better and better, which I thought that's what we did. We invented new bits that improve things. Also, if you remember, can you remember the 80s, Dave, when the Volkswagen Golf, were it, or the Jetta or something like that, where they could go 50 miles on a gallon? It was a big thing, weren't it? And
I'm maybe this is a Mandela effect, but I remember the big selling point of Mini Metro when it first came out was it would do something like 100 miles.
Yeah.
Now I'm saying this to people, and they say no, that was never the case.
I remember it. Yeah, I do as well. Yeah, because especially the Volkswagen, it had the Chinese guy on for some reason, because they were trying to, or the Japanese guy trying to take on the Japanese manufacturers, advertising a German Volkswagen, saying it would, you put a gallon in and it'd do X amount of miles, and that was the selling point. So where's that? Where's all that gone? Where's that technology gone? Because now, 40 years later, it should be doing a gallon to 1,000 miles, for instance.
Well, again, think about it. Why are we still using right, the same design of, you know, internal combustion engines? We've had it for over 100 years now, right? And in essence, it hasn't been changed.
Nope.
It hasn't been changed deliberately, right? Because, you know, the oil companies want to keep selling oil, right? So any sort of you know, innovation that would double fuel consumption, or not double, half fuel consumption, right, means half the amount of petrol is going to be sold. So you know, every innovation that comes along that might threaten the oil companies, but gets taken away and sort of binned. But if it wasn't for that, you know, that we'd have cars that would run on water, right, unlimited distances.
I remember
on,
that guy
on
meant
a liter of water, because water is the most powerful fuel of all, right? You know, it is hydrogen and oxygen, and they can be split. And
it's weird though, Dave.
Have actually done it.
They can come up with a experimental mRNA arm spear, and they can do that over coffee and a Domino's pizza in a week. And save the world.
I was saying that about space. You know, when I realised that the space is fake. You know, think about it. Right, the technology for space hasn't changed. There was on Star Trek Enterprise, okay? Star Trek Enterprise.
Mentioned that twice now today.
Series.
Yeah.
They had an opening sequence that showed, like, the progression of mankind, right? And it was, at the time, for me, it was really inspiring. This was, what, the 80s and early 90s or something? It was really inspiring, you know? You got these people on a raft that turned into a sailing ship, and then it went to an ocean liner, and then it went to planes, and then it went to, you know, and then it was a space shuttle, and then it went to a futuristic space shuttle, and then it went to a warp drive. And I was thinking, hang on a minute, where are all the flash spaceships?
Yeah.
Right? They're going to space. Yeah, they've been reusing this space shuttle since the 1980s. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Where are the innovations? Where are the improvements?
Can you remember when they said they couldn't make any more because they can't make the ceramic tiles or whatever they are that go on this space shuttle? It's like, what the fuck are you on about? You're not doing a bathroom out. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, we've been managed in this environment. We've been managed by this system. Who know that, you know, knowledge is power, and right, you know, going on from, oh, I've got some knowledge, so I'm powerful. They've gone on to, right, I've got this knowledge. If I keep it away from everybody else, it keeps me powerful, right? And the more knowledge I have, and I keep away from everybody else, the more powerful I get, and that's what. That's literally
two things I want to discuss before we finish up. You mentioned you were in New York and you were there. Am I right in thinking you were there in 9/11?
Yep, I was.
Yeah.
I was nearly in it.
Oh, yeah, we're coming up to the
anniversary, aren't we?
We are.
Is it this weekend? It's this weekend, isn't it?
Yeah. Thursday.
And like 2020 for people, it's easy. I'm not saying it's easily forgotten, but it's easily miniaturized, if you like, and put into another time where, I mean, it's a generation ago now, more than probably a generation ago, 9/11. And I can still remember it clearly. I was in Malta. Me and my mate had flown to Malta and we'd landed in the early hours. And it had, obviously, what had happened then in America, I remember seeing it unfold on the Truth Box on CNN in Malta.
I was, living in London at the time. And I was working that evening, and I got loads of phone calls saying, "Don't go into London." I lived just at Finsbury, Finchley, I lived in, and I was going into Islington, my chef's job. And years later, I must have been rereading a book, and I opened it, and I'd used the train ticket as a bookmark. And by chance, the train ticket, I should have kept it, I don't know where it is, and it said September 11th. It must have been when I was on my way into work. And it had loads of teeth marks in it where I'd been chewing it. I should have shamed myself.
Because yeah. I've got my passport stamped.
They might attack London.
Not here. But I've got my passport somewhere here from that time where I had it stamped in Malta, 9/11.
So I wouldn't like that because I don't like flying. I wouldn't like coming back.
it's strange anyway. We met this woman. Me and my mate met this woman at this hotel and her husband. And she had, what, it, four kids? It was strange. What a strange. I hope she's all right, but strange lady. Her kids were called Laura, Flora, Pandora, and Nora. Didn't forget them. That was 25 years ago.
Yeah, anyway, Dave, we've told that shit 9/11 stories. Well, you were in New York.
I was just going to say.
Yeah. Look at how shit ones.
I've still got the an ID card, right, from Tower One, World Trade Center, right, from August 2001, I went for my last interview with Lehman Brothers, and I turned that job down and took a job across the water in Hoboken.
So you would have been there.
Literally. I could have been in there, like if I'd made a different decision there. Mm. So I watched it from directly across the water there.
I was listening to Judy Wood just the other day, just because I thought we might end up talking about at some point 9/11. And I didn't realise, I knew there were more than Tower 1, 2 and Building 7. There were 7 buildings that went down. You were saying that to me over there, weren't you?
Yeah.
I didn't know there were 7. 7 buildings went down, the whole area.
There was 3 on the day, and they demolished the others later.
Right, they've been badly damaged.
Only 3 that went down on the day.
Right, from above, when Judy
damaged
Wood
by all that dust floating onto them.
There were big holes in them, weren't there? Like circular holes. What do you think really went on there? What's your view of it, Dave? That's
another story she told quickly. Sorry, before I forget. Another story she told was a guy, you know, the melted cars. A guy was getting in, he saw it happening, and he tried to break his way into a car to protect himself from all the dust falling out. And he's close to it on fire when he got into the car.
Yeah. I think we're seeing now that, the same events that happened at 9/11 at all these so-called wildfires. So we know, as Judy Wood basically says, directed energy weapons. They were testing them out there, they're still using them today. But as you know, my view of what happened there is the same as everybody else who's actually been actually researching this. They literally wired up those buildings beforehand. As I said, I went for interviews in Tower One, and what I found was that I think I was on the 40th floor, 39th and 40th floor, but I think the lift stopped one time at a different floor. Somebody must have pressed the wrong button, and the whole floor was empty. It was an empty floor. And since then, I saw pictures where the sun was coming through the, directly behind the tower. And you can see most of the floors were empty.
Right.
And it was only, one or two floors that were actually occupied. They wired up those buildings and the planes were just the rationale for the buildings falling down. Mm. And I think the plane that crashed in Pennsylvania was the one that was supposed to hit Building 7.
Right,
But I mean, that plane that just disappeared.
And it never got there, so they pulled it down anyway.
Yeah.
Just made a hole in the ground.
I mean, let's face it, whatever view anybody's got, whether you think it was an exotic weapon or explosives or whatever they've said, mini nukes, it is important, I suppose, but we'll probably never know exactly what happened. I would say it's probably all the... forget mini nukes, right? But it's probably all of the above, some exotic weaponry, some explosives to confuse everybody, etc. But that's my view. I'm not saying I'm right either.
At the end of the day, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
No. That thing vaporised, didn't it?
That event was my first awakening to any of this. Mm. And my next, you know, port of call was who was behind it.
Yes, exactly.
And after a little research, you find out that this group called the Project for a New American Century, you know, basically, you know, said we need this event like a new Pearl Harbor that, you know, get the American people behind going to war and setting up this security state. Yeah. And then a year later, all of those people behind that document were in Bush's cabinet.
Yes. Yeah.
So they, you know, they got their new Pearl Harbor.
Do you know what I found out just this week, actually? Well, not all of it, but something that came together. Tony Blair and George Bush, their genealogy all go back to like the Crusades, right? Saddam Hussein, his genealogy goes back to pharaohs, blooming Prophet Muhammad. Yeah, and it's just like the rinse and repeat of the Crusades, the fighting each other, and more probably, but you're no doubt going to talk about now.
What you'll find is all of these people, you know, who we'd call celebrities, we call politicians, you know, kings, all these men of renown, they're all of the same families.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm. It's this one particular bloodline. Mm. And it's no accident that you will say, oh, this person is a Rothschild, or this person is a
blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
Somebody showed, I saw a video where somebody actually showed that Karl Marx and that bloodline, well, it was really one of the Schwabs.
Yes.
And the Schwabs are Rothschilds.
Well, the Rothschilds, right? I did a load of research on that. It might be somebody who's used to my mind, but it was the Rothschilds and Schwab go back to a rabbi in the 1500s.
Yeah. And before that, they go in back Frankfurt. To Babylon and
exactly,
Egypt.
Yeah.
You know, so we're talking about, and I'm actually just putting together a new video that I'm gonna film, which is going to be a bit of clickbait because I think the title is going to be something like "Time to Talk About the N-Word."
Right. Right. Good. Yeah.
But the N-word's Nephilim.
Yeah.
Because, you know,
clever.
This is, you know, this world that we're in is, you know, I keep saying, is this battle between man and Nephilim. Mm. And, you know, we're near the end of it now.
And it's difficult for the general public, the NPCs, whatever, what do you call them?
Muggles.
Muggles. You call them muggles. The muggles, the NPCs, to see that these people who stand in front of a podium and tell them they're going to save them, Nigel Farage, people like that, Trump, are really still part of the same game.
Yeah. You know,
they are the Nephilim, or they're working for the Nephilim.
One thing is, you are, well, they're either Nephilim or collaborators.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's the thing. You're in the secret societies or you're of the bloodline.
Yes.
And
or both, you know, maybe. Yeah,
or both. Or, you know, because you can't get into a position of power without being in the club.
No, because even a useful idiot is still, even if they're blind to it, they're still a collaborator, whether they like it or not.
Yeah. I remember, and maybe you remember as well, when Virgin Records, right, which was at one point doing incredibly well. It was like, you know, it was the only sort of record store of note at one point. Mm. And then all of a sudden it went downhill.
Mm.
Right. That was when Richard Branson was approached.
Yes.
He was doing well on his own because he never went to school. That's the big thing. Never went to school. So he did really, really well.
Yeah.
And then he was approached. And I get the feeling he said, no, I'm not joining your club. And that's when Virgin went down.
Yeah. Well, he's got a...
Then he agreed. Mm. And then it went up through the roof and became Virgin Everything.
He's got the Plantagenet satanic bloodline as Branson.
I see. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
But
yes.
It doesn't surprise me.
Yeah. It didn't mean they know, though, does it? He might not have known it.
No, well, he might not have known it. Like the Damien from Omen, didn't know who he was until that sergeant came up to him and said, "We've been following you since birth, managing your life, basically." Yeah. And I remember doing a podcast on Richard Branson. He's an interesting character, given that his family was from some military type background, sirs and all sorts of people in his recent family. And his mother were a dame as well. And so they have got the right bloodline, there's no doubt. But he started up, when he started Virgin Records up, he started an abortion clinic up at the same time in his actual office. I've got a video of him. They filmed him in 1970 on BBC. He'd set Virgin Records up and he was advising young women on abortions.
Okay. Do they need to have another look at this guy, because
yeah.
I believe the story. So
yeah. But that story makes sense anyway, because like the pop stars, when they sign the Faustian bargain, the first contract might not be the Faustian bargain. That'll be to get them ingrained into the system and bought into fame and what have you. And likewise, Richard Branson, let him have a bit of money. Let him get bought in. Invite him to a few parties. Let him see these nice girls and all this type of stuff. And then we'll sink his business and get him to really buy into it.
I don't think these people treat each other. I don't think these people treat each other particularly well.
They don't care about each other.
If you're a bloody ego Satanist psychopath, you're not going to treat anyone well, whether they're family or friends or not, really, are you? You know, there's going to be times.
Yeah, I mean, they fight amongst each other, but when it comes to us, they get together and fight us together. So,
yes. I always said to Dom, Dave, that I think the scum at the top, if you like. Have their own rules, and I think some of them are like, they couldn't express the fake illness. They can't tell us about space, because people always go, "Yeah, but Russia and America had a space race. Surely they'd telegraph someone?" But that, maybe that's the agreement. They want some of the agreements. You can't talk about that. You can't talk about Antarctica. You can't talk about jibby jabs.
But Chris, Elon Musk could tell us.
Yeah, because he flew a roadster into fucking space.
Yeah, he flew a Tesla into space.
Playing David Bowie. Isn't it funny, right? If he did that, right, that'd be quite a big deal. But it's one of them things that happened, but most people don't know it ever happened. But that's supposed to be a legitimate thing, that he threw a roadster into space.
I wonder if they were trolling us, though. You know, they're saying, look what we can do and we can get away with.
Yeah. I do think about that sometimes. A lot of things, the problem is, it's just in the telly box. It's in the stream of bullshit, isn't it? That's all. It didn't mean anything at all, really. But I mean, I'm going to say that event was a nothing of nothing. And got all us talking about it, but most people don't even know it ever happened.
Anyway, so like you were saying, all of these people that are put in front of us are either collaborators or they're part of it. And you can't deny a bit. Chris Martin from Coldplay, right, played in a local pub in Halifax the other week in the summer. His management rang up and said, "Chris Martin wants to play at your pub." They do a bit of live music. And I think his sister lives locally somewhere around here. And I was telling a chap that I know, and he said, "Oh yeah, basically we're a nice guy coming." And I'm sure he's a lovely guy. No, but he's selling the agenda. He sells global climate warming change. He sold the 2020 nonsense. He was selling everything. But to make him look human, he played for an hour in this
to make him look human. Right.
But I said to this guy, I said, "Okay then, he's probably a lovely guy, and it probably means well, thinks he means well and all this." I said, "But his grandfather invented the savings time. His grandfather, the clocks going back, was his grandfather's invention."
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I said, "Who do you know in your family that's come up with something as huge as that, that changes people's lives?" Because every time the clocks go backwards and forwards, everyone goes, "What the fuck's that going on for?" That's Chris Martin's granddad.
Throws everyone out of sync, doesn't it?
Yes. And that's probably something to do with the speeding up of the... He actually wrote a song called fucking Clocks, didn't he?
I know.
I'm not a big Coldplay fan, but I know he wrote a song called Clocks or something.
Did he really?
Yeah, he did, yeah. Yeah, thinking about it. But anyway, it's another story. We were going to talk about that lovely building you're in there, and we were going to talk about manifestation. Because a big thing in mine and Chris's life is that, because we throw stuff out there into the universe, and it's surprising what bounces back on you in a positive light. And a lot of people don't agree with it, believe in it, whatever you want to call it. But I have felt the evidence of manifestation. I know Chris has.
Well, what I'm finding out is that this place isn't what we think it is. You know, we think of it as a, you know, solid nuts and bolts place, but it's a place of mind stuff. Mm. Yeah, it's like a dream in an infinite mind. You know, an infinite mind, and you know, we're sort of units of consciousness, small units of consciousness, looking at back at this construct of a mind. Mm. But we also have access to that mind. We're part of that mind, mm. and we have direct access to it. The Old Testament talks about Adam, right, made in the image and likeness of the Most High. Well, the Most High isn't a physical being, so he doesn't have arms and legs. So the likeness of the Most High is he had the mind of the Most High, the creative ability of the Most High. And that's what this place seems to be. We are part and parcel of this place, and we're co-creating it. We are creating our experience of this place. You know, our whatever is going on in your mind is being mirrored out here. Mm. Okay. So yeah, they've got this illusion out here of you know, depression and you know, this idea that life is getting worse, and you know, and we are accepting that in our hearts and minds, and we're projecting it back out here. So that's so what we get.
The more they tell us about it, the more it actually comes into fruition. Yeah. And the more people are talking about it, going, oh, everything's shit. It just turns to shit, doesn't it, I suppose?
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. It. And you can change it at any time. At any time, right? The problem is that our, you know, all our lives we're ingrained in this idea of pessimism, right? And you know, and oh, even if things are going well, it's like, oh, yeah, it's going to turn to shit any moment now, isn't it?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, true.
Right. And that's all that comes out of the news in the telly box. That's all that comes out of it. That everything's screwed. It always has.
Why do you think they created that thing? Mm. Right, it's to work on our minds. And that's the most important thing. Your mind is paramount here. Your mind and consciousness is what this thing is all about. Hmm. And if you can start to master your mind, right? None of this matters. None of this, all this, you know, new world order and all. No, that's just background fluff. Right? Hmm. You can, you know, if you take your attention away from it, it starts to fade. Yeah.
And that's why when me and Chris talk, I get a lot of sort of comments where people take this stuff very seriously, and some of it is serious in this realm, right? But in reality, it's meaningless. And I think that's why, say, people like yourself can research this stuff, and it not make you want to jump off a bridge, for want of a better phrasing, you know, because you look at it and you think, all right, it's interesting, but it's not, you know, it can't affect me.
Yeah, yeah. I've come across this guy, this Russian guy, who's been speaking about what I'm talking about for a while. He's written a book, and he talks about what he calls pendulums, and a pendulum.
How weird's that? I don't normally listen to radio, and cricket were on radio today. One of the commentators were going on about pendulums. What the fuck's that all about? Random. Never listened to the radio. I actually listened to it for about 5 minutes and turned it off. And this woman, who were a commentator, were talking about pendulums. And she kept bringing it up over this 5 minutes. And you've just talked about pendulums. And I'm, anyway.
Oh, wow. Okay.
People talk about pendulums every day, don't they?
Oh, every second of every day.
Then that's the synchronicity for you there. Yeah. But he talks about pendulums as energy structures that that people just end up believing in. And the more energy you give to this thing, the more it sways and the more it grabs you and takes you in and, you know, carries you along, right? But so a good example, okay, he gives, imagine that somebody not really interested in football, right, is sitting at home one day and there's football on the TV. And for the first time, he kind of looks up and he finds it kind of intriguing. So he starts watching more and more matches, right? And he gets into football. So he ends up going to a match. Well, now he's a fan, yeah? And, you know, while he's at the matches, he's jumping up and down and going, yeah, and oh, right? And getting really into it. And before long, he's on the sidelines of the pitch, you know, going, yeah, and all that.
Wanting to fight everybody, yeah.
Eventually, he's on the pitch now, and somebody passes in the ball, yeah? So, you know, this is a pendulum. It grabs you and then takes you in, and yeah, you give all your energy to it, and it captures you. But if you ignore it, if you don't even sort of go out of your way to ignore it, because even that is giving it attention. Yeah. But if you just accept it and let it be, just
it's a difficult place. It's a difficult place to get to, isn't it? Where you know it's there, but it doesn't have an effect on you. It's not drawing you in or drawing you away.
Like me, I've got no interest in football whatsoever anymore, right? If there's a match on, it's just like it's just there, and it's not going to have any effect on me whatsoever, right? But you get an England fan in there, and it's England against Germany, right? They're in there. They can't take their eyes off it,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
That's the thing. So and he says there are pendulums everywhere, all trying to get your attention and trying to draw you in and draw your energy away. Yeah. But, you know, you can just...
Especially when you're young.
Give them no attention whatsoever, and the swing falls through you, yeah? But if you can avoid these pendulums taking your attention and your energy, you can actually focus your energy into whatever it is you want in this world. And as long as you don't put too much importance on whatever it is you want, so define what it is and just know that it's yours, right? Then, you know, it will come to you. As long as you start making moves towards it, right, it will meet you halfway.
Which is why they're nullifying creativity, if you like, and that there's a powerful, you know, imagination is powerful, isn't it? That is part of the manifestation, imagining something, turning it to reality.
Yes,
it's only part of it. That I'm not saying it's all of it.
Let me give you another example. So I believe Adam, right? Adam had this ability to create whatever he wanted, right? And you know, have it come to pass. It was a part of his natural abilities that he didn't even have to think about, right? And that is the way we should be able to do it without even putting any strain on it whatsoever. So if you lay your hand down, right, by your side, okay, and command it, right, command it to lift in the air with your willpower. Say, lift in the air. Is it moving?
No, funnily enough.
No. Yeah. Right. So really think about moving your hand, right, moving it up in the air. Is it moving?
No.
No. But if you were kids again and I said, who wants ice cream? Before you know it.
Your hands up.
Your hands in the air, isn't it? Yeah, yeah. Right? You don't know how you did that, right? It was effortless to do it, right? To lift your hand. If you try and force it to move, it doesn't move, right? There's a certain something that we can't even describe. Right? Any word we give to that thing that makes your hand move is the prelude to it moving. It's not the actual thing.
Yes.
It's not intention, because you can intend your hand to move and it won't move. You know, you can try and force it to move. It won't move. But there's something that is effortless that we go, okay, we need to move. And so the way of thinking about this manifestation is, it's not that I demand to come, or this is going to come, this is going to come, this is going to come.
It's not about that at all, is it? No.
It's not about that at all. It's more like, it turns out that my nose is itchy.
Yeah.
So what happens is your hand goes up and...
Yes, yeah.
Right. It happens. I want
Why
to
did my nose start
ice
itching
cream.
Then? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That's the sort of way of looking at it rather than I demand my hand move. Right? Yeah. I demand that I have the house that I want. I demand
it's
it.
It's not all that nonsense. That's not...
Yeah. I mean, even on an instinctive level, you know that that's just the wrong way about it, don't you?
Yes.
Right.
Or I want to damage somebody, or I want this to happen to them.
That's something else, though.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. If you want to damage somebody, right? Let's say you want your brother to have a broken leg.
Would
right?
Never want that.
Nose, man.
Well, no, just as as an example.
Right?
If
much
you
too
wanted
light
him
there,
to have
that.
A broken leg,
yeah,
what would you be concentrating on?
His swan-like looking legs.
You'll be concentrating on a broken leg, aren't you?
Yeah, yeah.
So what are you going to draw into yourself?
Yeah, you're going to draw the same toxins in, aren't you? Yeah.
You're going to draw the broken leg into... You're going to, you know, wish he had a broken... And you're going to trip up and break your leg, yeah?
Yeah.
That is the beauty of this system.
Mm.
That, you know, if you wish harm on somebody, that's what's going to come to you.
Yeah.
If you wish good things on somebody, then good things are going to come to you. We're exploring what it means to be alive and what it means to be, you know, 3D beings in this world. Mm. Yeah. That encompasses the good parts and the bad parts, right? You don't know the good until you experience the bad.
But that story of God, if you like, has been sold to us by a mafia that reads the Bible out and
religion.
Says it's the truth. Yeah, exactly. And that's a totally different... That's not what the reality is it? That's a bastardization. It's like the mafia telling you, this is true, you better believe it.
Yep. And how many people are controlled by that religion or by all religions? They're controlled in some way. Mm. You know, their thoughts, their actions are controlled by the tenets of that religion. The book that all these religions, you know, stem from isn't about religion. It's a way of life.
Yes.
And it's a way for a harmonious way of life.
Mm.
You know, all our common law is based on it. Don't harm anybody. Don't lie to people.
Don't steal off people. Don't commit adultery. Don't do
sleep
all this
with other people's wives. You know, it's like, you know, it should be obvious.
Commonsensical.
Yeah, but no, it's the actual meaning of the book has been hijacked by religions, and you know they've been controlling people with these religions ever since.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so. No, but it's not just religions, it's everything. It's, you know, it's your education. Your education system is about locking you in the left side of your brain. Right? Yeah. So you don't get to access that part of the universe.
I was going to say, Dave, when the
creativity.
When you were talking about the pendulum theory and the football theory, that's why they get as young to get... Everyone gets hooked on something when they're a teenager, don't they? Whether it's even books, whether it's comics, whether it's films, sport, music, you get on one of those pendulums, don't you? At least one, and then you're stuck on it forever.
the nets are massive, aren't they, the casting and the multiple nets on top of nets, if you like. That so many entrapments. I mean, especially when we were younger, you used to have rock music and it was just rock music. Then they broke it into 20 different types of rock music or dance music or soul music, and so even that micro trapped you. In, you know, if you don't like that, then you like this, and anyway.
Well, even before you were born, they had the music had been retuned to a frequency that jangles your nerves, you know?
Yeah.
But how did they get you to a point as well? Say you like a certain kind of music. How did they get humans to be sniffing at someone else? Because they're like a different kind of music. I did it. I used to do it. Oh, what do you mean you're into that kind of music? You know, almost turning it just with music, turning us against each other, or what films you liked, or what, you know. I used to be a film snob, you know. Oh, what, you watch that shit? It's just a film. It doesn't matter, does it, really? Yeah. It's just a slice of entertainment.
But it's no different from supporting Man United or Liverpool, isn't it?
And getting angry.
Your team's better than yours. Your team's better than...
I mean, I've got no interest in football. I've got no interest in football, but when I hear people slagging off other fans, because them, and I'm like, What? And I've actually asked this: why are all? Oh, they're just all assholes. Them fans. What? All the fans are assholes. That yeah, entire team.
But then when England are playing, it's Germany that are assholes. Yeah. You know,
it's amazing, isn't it?
They're all pendulums.
Yeah,
they're all pendulums, and they've got their own people in adherence in their pendulum.
You can see billions.
Those people over there, they're the enemy, and all.
You can see you know. Billions of mousetraps going off, and football comes on, can't you? Well, are you doing any more live talks up and down the UK? I know you've been doing a few.
This year I'm not doing too many. I just got booked for one talk next month. But this year I'm not doing talks because I'm focused on this mortgage project,
right?
Which is taking up all my time at the moment.
When are you back at Caribbean?
I should be going again in November,
right.
Maybe next year when I get back, I'll do another tour. I think this latest talk, I really need to get out there. I'm right now doing a documentary. I'm trying to do a documentary about this talk,
right?
But you know, it's just me. I'm not a filmmaker. I'm just going to do my best.
Well, none of us are, mate. But you're going to try these things and you learn from it and then move on and do it.
Keep us updated about the mortgage thing as well, Lev, because I've got a mortgage that I don't want.
Right, we'll see.
When do you want to come on and talk about it?
I could tell you about it because it's getting very interesting and we've got a really cool strategy.
Yeah,
I'll tell you about it sometime.
All right, then, mate. Well, we'll call it a day there, and then wait till next time. Do something else. We'll talk about the mortgage. What's it called? The mortgage project.
Yes, the mortgage project.
Yeah, we'll talk about that next time. I'll probably end up talking about a load of other things as well. No doubt.
Yeah, obviously.
Never short, are we?
No, never short. Never short stuff. We didn't even come prepared. What were your first words to me? What were we talking about? I said, I don't know. We'll just talk. And we have done. An hour and a half burnt up. Yeah. All right, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. If you're coming onto part two, we'll see you there. If not, we'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye. Cheers, Dev. Oh,